Accession number 12941, Wally Binch, Reel 8.
Mr. Binch, Reel 8. Now, we're talking about you were doing this job of evacuating casualties, Heavy Edwards for one.
Yes. And then the next one was Sergeant Pat Jock Mackay.
Your singing partner?
Our singing partner, yes. He got wounded in the back.
That's all right.
Sorry about that. He got wounded in the back and he could hardly sit, so he must have been behind as well. And I took him back. And
were they able to? I mean, it's quite difficult to if you're wounded on a motorbike. Were they? Did you strap them on at all?
No, they just hung on the back. I just took them back and away we went as fast as we could.
And where did you take them back to?
Well, to an RAP post. I first of all reported to Captain Shaw.
The Black Flash.
Black Flash, yes. And even saluted, and he said, "Stop bloody playing at Soldier's Binch," because I'm still there, still doing the film star bit, you know. I think I'm doing a good job. And then deposited them with the RAP, and then came back again. And then...
And the RAP was where?
Somewhere near the docks. Somewhere...
Quite a way back, then?
Quite a way back, yes. This was, yeah. Although... I say quite a while back, it must have been possibly a couple of miles, something like that. Not too far back, I suppose, really.
Right.
I suppose they found a building that was suitable for the purposes. And whilst we were there, in that position, there was a bridge which was a little bit towards, on the Pontefracti Road, near us, and I'd got to deliver a message to an anti-tank gun that was in the house on the right-hand side of the bridge, and it was only a small bridge, and I went over it on the motorbike and went to, I think it was Sergeant Bowley, and I'd no sooner got there than Jerry started stonking the bridge, and they all called me names because, silly bugger, I'd given the position away by driving the motorbike over the bridge straight to the gun. So I got back, and after that I had to go underneath the bridge and clamber up on the other side to take any messages.
Oh, with your bike? Or
no,
you leave the bike?
Foot, yes, just leave the bike there then. So just climb down the canal, or I think it was a canal. And one night I was going down there, and I just got down there, I could hear the tramp of a patrol. Well, there was a lot of talk about Germans infiltrating along the canal bed there. And I thought, are these Jerrys or are they our lot? But I never knew, because I just kept quiet and kept my back pressed to the wall, and I was ready. I'd got the Tommy gun with me, and I was ready in case. But luckily for me, they never saw me, and I never made a move. So.
And you never knew who they were?
I don't know to this day who they were.
Yeah. Had you been trained in a Tommy gun at all?
Well, we fired Tommy guns, yes. I can't remember.
You just picked it up?
Yeah. As a dispatch rider, I had to carry a Tommy gun. It's just, I suppose, as simple as that. What else happened there? There's one incident which I think most of the people on that road will remember. In fact, at reunions, we often remind ourselves about it. Was the fact that we were there one day, supposedly all waiting for Jerry, and then suddenly a Jerry motorcyclist came straight past us. Past all of us, we just hadn't got time to fire at him. Straight past, he was obviously lost, and we hadn't got time to stop him. But later on, we heard some banging at the back of us, and he never came back. So somebody eventually got him.
Now, how long were you in these front positions?
I would say we were there for about a week, just about a week there.
And where were the Germans in relation to you? Did you really know where they were?
We knew they were in some woods. Up the Pontefracti Road and on the left, and they had been trying to infiltrate through. But beyond that, we didn't see them. I didn't see them. Yeah.
So after the 4 or 5 days or whatever, you were pulled back, were you?
That's right, yes. We were pulled back into some reserve positions. Let me think now. I'm getting a little bit hazy there. After a little while, we heard that the DLIs had taken Carver, and we were situated in the hilly country above Carver, in the, around a place called Presiato, and we as the anti-tank platoon were being used as infantry without the guns, and we were situated in a house where there was a family with us, at least our section was. And I remember the family, there was Mama, Papa, Aldo, Enzo, Franco, and the little girl about 12 years old, Carmelina. And of course, being a musician, I hadn't got the ukulele with me, as far as I remember, but we taught Aldo to sing "I I Yippee Yippee I" and songs like that. And when we eventually left, the little lad was in tears, and we said, well, I'd got the address of where they lived in Salerno, because they were a family who really lived in Salerno, but were sheltering from the fighting in the hills in Presiato. So they gave me the address, and I said, well, one day we may meet again. As luck would have it, we did meet again, because after a few months, they opened a rest camp in Salerno and for troops to come out the line and have a week's rest. Well, I said to whoever it was, it might have been Black Flash, could I have a week's rations, and instead of going to the rest camp, can I go and see this family? Which I found their address, and I went and stayed the week with this Italian family. So I had another week with Aldo, probably why I remember the name so well. Yeah.
No, this was reserve positions in Pregatio. Sorry.
That's right, yes, yes.
You weren't under attack there.
No, the whole thing, all the infantry was more or less standing still, because at that time then they were letting the armoured div go through along the main road, the armoured, the armour going through the main road to into Naples. And we heard that we'd been held back so that somebody else would have the honour of being the first to go into Naples.
Now, there's a couple of stories that aren't particularly attached to particular places, but around this early period in front of Salerno. One of them actually was while you were near the bridge, was about you being shelled, and it changed your attitude a bit. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, somewhere around that general area, Neville were in Stonkiness, and myself and either a sergeant or a sergeant major were caught out in the open, and we huddled together, and we just cowered there, and these shells were dropping. I thought, they're never going to stop, and this is it, I've had it. And I felt like praying, but I've never been a praying person. So I said to myself, well, if ever I get out of this, I shall never ever worry about anything petty ever again. Just get me out of it. And I did get out of it, and I've always remembered that ever since. Another thing, one day, and I got my motorbike on a bend or something on the road, and this officer came up, some officer, he who must be obeyed. Right, I want your bike.
Your officers, then?
One of our officers, yes. Oh, yes, I wouldn't have given it to any other. But I want that bike, and I'd got all my equipment in it, in the panniers as well, everything, personal things, all my looted things, all that sort of stuff. And off he went, and I never saw him or the bike again. That was gone. So I lost, for the second time, I lost all my equipment, yeah. Another thing, all these things happened. One day we passed a building somewhere in the middle of Salerno. The first floor, the wall had been knocked away from the first floor, and we saw a grand piano up there. We got the GMC trucks. So we had a word with Black Flash, and we said this would come in ever so handy for concerts later on. So he decided to turn a blind eye, and we somehow or other, we winched the piano onto the truck, and we carried that with us, and it was used later on in concerts. It probably was taken back to B Echelon and stored for us.
Now, what about Walker and your friend Eddie? They'd come back, hadn't they?
Ah, now, one day, Johnny Walker... I was on a hill somewhere, and up came Johnny Walker. I was so pleased to see him. Oh. And he told me that he'd made his own way out of hospital. He hadn't waited to be discharged, and he'd hitched a ride on an American ship coming over. Made his own way to us. And he hadn't got a gun. Well, I found or pinched either Colt or Webley 38. It had belonged to an MP, and some MP had carelessly left it about, and being what I was, I pinched it, and then I gave it to Captain Walker. And I do remember that Johnny Walker was taken prisoner on the Volturno, so that went with him. And the first words I said to Johnny Walker when I saw him after the war was, "Have you got my gun?" Of course he hadn't, that was just our game.
So the next major thing that happened would be the crossing of the Volturno River.
That's right, yes.
What do you remember about that operation?
Well, we after the we laid up in Pregiato, we went through Naples. I remember seeing Naples, lots of kids scrounging and asking for cigarettes and things, and there was no gas and there was water spraying all over the place. And we went on the road towards the Volturno. We laid up there for a few days. I remember we met an old Italian who kept telling us how he'd fought the Germans, and I always remembered he used to sing to us, "O Sole Mio," in a crackly voice, "O Sole Mio," which I've remembered to this day. And then we started to get towards the Volturno thing. What happened on the Volturno was that the anti-tank guns were lined up at the side of the Volturno, along with the carriers, the Bremen carriers, but they never went across. So all we did was stand by there, and the most we saw of it was some of the POWs that came back, and we just looked after them. I remember we weren't at all resentful for them. We thought, well, they're in the same boat as we are.
What was their demeanour? I mean, how did they behave, the Germans?
Well, the Germans that we saw over there, well, they weren't very happy, of course. And I think their general thing was, well, that's it. Thank God we're out of it. And there didn't seem to be any resentment or anything between any of us, you know, at that stage.
Your battalion took another bit of a bashing there, really.
Yes. Yes, they went over during the night, and they got pinned down, and they got attacked by tanks, and they got no anti-tank guns at all across there, and we couldn't understand why. Well, we could, because you couldn't get them across. There were no ferries, there were no platoons. The general feeling was amongst the battalion that we'd been used as a decoy for the general attack of lots of others across the Volturno. And yeah, we lost Johnny Walker. Captain Walker was taken prisoner there. He went across as OC S Company. S Company, yeah. By this time, we were called Support Company. We weren't in HQ Company anymore, you see. It was things like mortars and anti-tank and Vickers. We were Support Company. And he was taken prisoner, and Black Flash became our permanent commander. And I remember that he came round and he gave us all Johnny Walker's cigarettes and things like that, but he must have kept Johnny Walker's whiskey, etc., for himself. So we didn't like Black Flash much for that.
Now, what about the battalion? You'd been bashed up at Sedgenine, and, you know, to some extent, and now again.
Yes.
Was the battalion beginning to change character at all? Were there new people you were getting? You'd be getting drafts in, I presume.
That's right, yes.
Were there new people from Nottingham and Derbyshire, or were you starting to get diluted as a Nottingham unit, or Nottingham and
Well, the first ones in North Africa, they were coming from the 70s and places like that, yeah, and foresters and that.
So after Sedgenine, you were made up by people from your own area?
Yes, it seemed to be. Yes.
What about after Volturno?
And then after Volturno, well, then is when we started getting all sorts of different people, you know, and you hear all sorts of different dialects and Londoners and from all over the city.
How did you feel about that?
We just took it for granted.
You didn't mind that you weren't going to be an all Nottingham or all, you know, unit?
No, there was no thought of anything like that, no.
And were the new chaps as good? I mean, you were a volunteer. I mean, were people perhaps who'd been conscripts?
Yeah.
Did you see a difference in people yourself? Because it was a territorial battalion originally.
That's right, yes.
So, I mean, the territorials, you were a volunteer as well. How did you react when people were sent in who were, say, conscripts? Was there any feeling?
Well, most of the reinforcements were going to the companies. You see, there wasn't the turnover in the anti-tank platoon that there would be in the company, you see. So although we saw them, we wouldn't mix with them as much as the company lads would, you see. We get to see, obviously, different people. Odd ones would come into us, but we wouldn't have felt it as much as, say, some of the lads in the companies would have felt the reinforcements.
Now, Eddie returned as well.
Eddie eventually returned. Just where and when, I don't know, because not long after that, it was decided that there was no role at the moment for the anti-tank platoon. So the anti-tank platoon was temporarily disbanded. We didn't see the guns. And
do you know what the thinking was behind that? Because they'd just been caught across the Volturno by tanks.
Yes, yeah.
And with no support. You couldn't get across the river, but...
Yeah, well, where we were after the Volturno, we were in endless sort of mountain areas where you couldn't get tanks operating, you couldn't get anti-tank guns and things like that, you see. In the area of Mount Camino and around the Garigliano, it was definitely infantry country and nothing else. So we as S Company were then employed in portering, carrying ammunition up by night, along with Indians, along with mules and that sort of thing. And we did meet some Indian troops there, by the way, for either Indians or Gurkhas. And I think the thing that surprised us was that they didn't use toilet paper like we did. They used their hands and washed their hands, and used one hand, I can't quite remember. And if they ever drew their blades, they got to draw blood, that sort of thing. Because there was all sorts of stories going about how they crept up to German positions and cut the head off one and left the other one to wake up to it. Whether that was true or not, we don't know. But those sort of stories were taken as gospel.
I mean, you didn't like the Arabs, so what did you feel about... Did you feel respect for the Indian troops?
Oh, yes. Well, these were different. They were different people again. From what, you know, we didn't have a lot to do with it. We knew they were there, and we'd said hello and found out one or two of the customs and that. But, yeah, we did respect them, I would say, yes.
Now, on the disbandment, temporary, of the anti-tank platoon, was the S Company was used as portering, but you weren't attached to a company?
We were later, yeah, but first of all, we were used portering for, you know, taking ammunition up and that. But later on, there was myself, Jock Mackay, Eddie Hallett, and we were put into A Company under Captain Lord.
Lord.
Tony Lord. Yes, Tony Lord, yeah. And I've worked it out that the place we were at was a place called Mount Tujo. To us at the time, it was just a bloody great mountain, and we were on the top, and you couldn't dig into it, so you had to make stones and build a sangar to lay in. And it was just two people to a sangar. So, and the nearest one would perhaps be 20 yards away or something like that, or 10 yards away. And I spent a few days there. One of the nights, I remember that it was with the two off during the night. And
talk about a patrol, I think. Where were the Germans at this point? Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
In relation to your...
Well, the Germans, to best of our knowledge, were on the next hill. There was a valley. And then the Germans were on the next hill to us. And I'll say, one night we were doing our... it was my turn to keep awake, and Eddie was asleep. And I could hear these sounds coming along towards us, and getting more and more weird. There's definitely somebody coming. And I thought, well, there's a crowd, there's Jerry's coming up, and I'm trying to wake Eddie without making a noise, and hell of a job, and I'm trying to... sort of thing. And then suddenly I heard a little tinkle, and it's all sheep, mountain sheep moving past us. Give me the shock of my life. I thought we'd been overrun. Oh, thought we'd been overrun. But luckily for us, there were sheep. And on that same area, probably round about next day or something, Captain Lord was detailing Eddie, my mucker, to go on a two-man patrol down into the valley to a farmhouse below. Well, I loved Eddie. I didn't want him to go. And I said something. He can't go, so he's sick or something. I said, I'll go. And we went together. I remember he had a grey blanket around me to sort of camouflage me. We went down into this farmhouse, and we're looking around there. There's a lot of dead Germans down there. And one lad whose face I can see at this moment, is blonde hair and his teeth drawn back, and I almost stepped on his face, and I couldn't believe it when I saw all these dead Germans there. Anyway, Tony Lord picked up a Smizer and some other things, and he saw a big radio set or something, which he put on my back, and I was to carry that up the hill. And just as we going to leave there, or leaving there, Jerry started shelling the area. I thought, oh, Christ, he's seen us with his dead. You know, that's the thought that went through my mind. He's going to really hammer us for this. But he didn't, and we got away and got up the hill. But I think that shook me a bit, the sight of all those dead Jerrys and that, you see. But I think we got relieved then that more or less around about that time by the guards. And the thing I remember about being relieved, it took us quite a long while to get down that hill, probably about 8 hours to get down. We'd come down and we'd have 10 minutes rest and then come down, keep coming down again. And on one occasion, Eddie Allett and I, we got down and we were buggered, absolutely buggered. And Pat Mackay, the sergeant, trying to get us to our feet, and we wouldn't get up, and he finished up kicking us to make us get up, you know. And this is the same Jock Mackay that we sang songs with, you know.
Jock Mackay is Pat Mackay.
I call him Pat now because I've been taught since the end of the war to call him Pat, you see, but it was Jock, you know, all the time. And it was Jock Mackay, you see, it's hard for me to keep
Well, nicknames, well, there are a lot of nicknames used in the army. I mean, there are standard army nicknames, like Topper
things.
Brown. I mean, was everyone given a nickname?
Jock Mackay, Robbo for Robbo. I'm trying to think of the people I personally know who'd got Betty Betton, well, a bit family, one of the drivers.
What about you?
Always just Wally, Eddie? And Eddie, always Eddie, yeah. So, Heavy Edwards, his name was Bert, you see, really, but we called him Heavy. There was a fella called Jack Arnold in the anti-tank platoon, we called him Nana, I don't know why, but he was Nana and he became Nana. So, various people had various.
And the officers, names. You mentioned a couple of officers, Johnny Walker, and I suppose Johnny real name?
Well, Johnny Walker was his real name, actually, yeah, Captain J.M. Walker, but obviously Johnny Walker, and he did drink whiskey, yeah, and he did, and Black Flash was called that because had this thing, and he had a head so big that he couldn't get an ordinary chin hat on, and he used to wear an American helmet, and in the dusk he often looked like a Jerry, and we all said, well, one of these days he's going to get really shot because he's coming through the gloom towards you, but no, he never did.
So you've just been relieved, come down these hills.
Yes. And we didn't know it, but that was the last time we were going to be in the mountains for some while, because shortly afterwards then, we were sent to to the Middle East.
Now, you'd been relatively lucky then in that part of the campaign, yourself.
Oh, yes.
You hadn't been in the Garigliano part, so to speak. You hadn't been involved in much of the fighting yourself.
No, I hadn't, no. So I was having a good war. Yeah, I still got the spirit, you know, that...
I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, had you had any of the edges knocked off you in that sense? I mean, did you start to get more nervous or less nervous as you came under fire?
Well, I'd had some... Under shell fire, say, at Salerno, I'd had that experience and been a bit wary. And I'd seen... we had a few casualties, but I was... Basically, I was still... play acting the war, you know, enjoying the adventure, I would say.
It wasn't affecting your nerve at all?
No, no. Later, I know later on towards the end of the war, when we heard backfiring or when we heard bangs, I was starting to automatically put my head down and that.
But not at this
but
stage.
But not at that stage, no, I wasn't, no.
So, this trip out, you were going to the Middle East.
Yes.
What do you remember about the journey? Were you pleased, firstly?
Well, we all thought we were going home. The rumours had it. We're going back to Blighty, you see. And it wasn't until we... Because nobody ever told us where we were going. And it wasn't until we getting towards port side sort of thing that it was let out that we were going to Egypt, after all.
Now, which ship had you travelled? You went in February. Do you remember what... On 44. Do you remember what...
I did know it, and I've forgotten it.
And what was the trip like?
Yes. Well, it was just a straight... I remember hardly anything about it, so it must have been just a sort of a straightforward trip, you know. And I don't think it took too long.
And you went to Port Said, you said?
And we went to Port Said, and... see, would we see the Nile there? Would we? Yeah, we would, yeah. Remember the... once again, the Arabs selling us things as soon as we got there, I think. We got there, and... we were given Egyptian money and that, and eventually we went to some camp, and the whole battalion had about 4 days leave at Cairo. And Cairo, the only thing I really remember about Cairo is that Eddie Hallett and I went of all things to a fortune teller, and she told me that I was going to lose a leg, and she didn't say Eddie was. So whenever we went into action again, I thought, is this where I lose my leg? I got that on my mind. I thought, what a stupid thing to do, go and see a fortune teller in the middle of a war.
Anyway, what was an unusual thing for a fortune... I mean, it's not a... That's a fairly nasty thing for her to say,
yeah,
really.
But they are.
Were you superstitious? Because you weren't religious, you said. But
yeah. No, I don't think I was. But having had that said to me, you know, it was there, at the back of my mind, so I think. Yeah.
And what did you think of Cairo, other than that? You don't remember much...
For us, it was just a city. We hadn't seen one for quite a while, and there's places to go and try and get drunk again.
So where were you based in when you were? I mean, where were you based in?
Well, I believe it was called Camp 21, or was that in Palestine later? We were on the move quite a bit. We were based somewhere outside Cairo, anyway. The names of Nathania come to my mind. Camp 21. Because later we went to Palestine.
I'll come to Palestine, but while you were in Egypt, what were you doing there as a battalion rather than individuals?
Well, we'd gone to rest and retrain. So the first things first, everybody had the leave and all that. And then eventually in Egypt, we started training. And as an S Company man, once again, I was not now a Donar. I'm back in the anti-tank platoon full.
And you had your guns again in the end?
We got...
You were reformed?
We were reformed with guns. We had guns again. We trained on guns. And we were also learning how to use mortars and also how to use the Vickers gun.
And so you were having a wider training than just the anti-tank training,
right,
you had.
Yes.
Which mortar were you using?
It would be... would it be 3-inch mortar? I think it was 3-inch, wasn't it? I think it was...
And what did you think of that as a weapon?
Yeah. Well, I can only remember a very short time. The Vickers stands more in my mind, probably because we did a song about it. And we didn't do one about... I remember we tried to do a song about the mortars, empty mortars in the QM stores, but we couldn't get any farther with it. That was it, yeah.